Thursday, November 1st, 2012, 7:38 p.m., my home in Oregon. I wanted to define what combat is. Now that we have defined what a combatant is and a warfighter is, obviously I want to define what combat is. Merriam-Webster Dictionary defines or refers to combat as being an act or a fight, a struggle between two opposing forces. And a combatant being that person who is readily engaged in or ready to, able to, fight in that engagement between two forces trying to oppose each other's will. The Marine Corps Doctrinal Publication 1, Warfighting, that I have referred to in the manuscript, quotes a war general in saying that combat or war is the force or the implementation of one party's will against another party, of an opposing will, via the use of force. Okay? So that's a textbook or kind of a linear definition of what war is and what combat is. War is the larger scale. Battles occur in wars. Combat occurs in battles. Okay? Now that we have that basis or that foundation kind of figured out, I would submit to you that not everyone who has seen combat has seen it in the typical Hollywood kind of depicted, movie depicted, game, book depicted, kinetic fashion. Before we get further into that, let's kind of figure out the status of wars in the past couple of wars. Okay, we're in OEF in Iraq and Afghanistan, and this is an asymmetrical battlefield. House to house, street to street, country to country. Okay, military operations in urban terrain, mount training. Think SWAT, or out there in the middle of the desert, or out there in the middle of a mountain. Okay, Vietnam was something of the same. Korea was even something of the same. In fact, both world wars were something of the same. It wasn't until the Revolutionary War where war started to evolve from a linear opposing forces on a wide open plain firing point blank at each other into a more guerrilla type warfare. Guerrilla warfare being exactly what was used in Vietnam. Terrorist tactics. Terror is a guerrilla tactic. Okay? Predating the colonial wars, the Revolutionary War, war was basically a line of opposing forces fighting each other in a direct, linear fashion. That is combat, definitely. That is kinetic violence. Person to person, fist to face, knee to gut, knife to gut, I'm touching you, you're touching me, kinetic violence. It's definitely combat, and that exists today still. However, not nearly as much, and definitely not in the same ways that existed 280 years ago, and pretty much every time before that. War hasn't necessarily changed. By war, I mean the actual act of aggression. Never really changed a whole lot until about 280 years ago, 300 years ago, the birth of this country. Now, generals of that time, generals of this time, studied history, studied combat, studied war, and they're not necessarily the proprietors of these guerrilla tactics or scare tactics. These are ideas, these are things that have been going on forever, effectively, as far as you and I are concerned. But they were not largely implemented until about 300 years ago. And even then, they haven't seriously been implemented until the World Wars. Vietnam, most especially, and most certainly post-dating Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan. Now, it is easy if I walk up to any high schooler in America, okay? Hey kid, what's combat? guy. They might think about a video game. They might think about a movie. Firefights. We know what firefights are. Those are definitely examples of combat. They are not the only example of combat by any means. And to think so is dangerously ignorant, to be honest with you. Because if you're good in today's warfare, today's asymmetrical battlefield, if you are a good force or a skilled combatant, there isn't kinetic combat. It doesn't happen. Kinetic combat gives the opponent a chance to fight and to win and to kill you, just as much as it gives you a chance to fight and to win and kill them. Well, it doesn't take, you know, a scientist or a combat general to figure out the best way for me to win is for me not to give them a chance to fight back. Snipers are a great example. A sniper engaging a target, I would call that combat. It's not kinetic. You're not engaged hand to hand, fist to fist. Sword to knife, bayonet in the throat, rifle to rifle, they're not. That is combat. Manning a post, a vehicle control point, a personnel checkpoint, or a checkpoint, a defensive position around a FOB, forward operating base, or base itself, or wherever. That's combat. You may not, and hopefully you're not, directly engaged in kinetic combat operations while defending that post. That would be the idea, is they present such a big, badass target, you posture so much that you don't get into kinetic combat. They simply choose not to attack you because you would kill them. So I would submit to you, in a very loose definition of all the things that I have now talked about, that combat is the real or perceived implication of kinetic danger. Lethal force and the actions that that person must therefore execute in that environment that is either seriously and really out to get them, or that they perceive is out to get them. There's a saying in the Marine Corps that perception is reality. Well, perception in war is reality too. If you perceive that I am dangerous, that I am the big badass, then I am. If I perceive that an innocent person that only God knows is innocent is actually conspiring against me or my platoon, well, guess what the reality is? A person's an enemy, or potential enemy, and it's suspected as being so. Combat is not necessarily kinetic violent action. It's a mentality, it's a place you have to be. I have to fight that tendency to think that combat is a kinetic action, in which case I have seen very little kinetic combat. I have to fight that tendency because I have to step outside of my own box, outside of my own training. To me, walking around Iraq, observing people, noting things, being suspicious, and trying not to walk on a bomb is fairly commonplace, and it doesn't really mean much. Good job, dude. You're doing what you're supposed to do. You're doing your job, you're not special. Now, if I step outside of my brain, and I go and take the average person out here in American society, and I drop their dumb ass off, boots on deck in the middle of Iraq, they're gonna think it's combat, real quick. They're not gonna be used to the idea of walking around trying to make sure you don't walk on a bomb. Trying to make sure you don't get shot by some Allah Akbar extremist. So it is very much so a state of mind. It is not necessarily a physical place. It is not necessarily a physical action. It is constantly being on guard, presenting the idea of being able to execute these very violent offensive or defensive actions against other people. It is a state of mind. Again, I will say it is real or perceived implication of danger. I mentioned this previously people who are not trained, people who are not very well disciplined, people who are not very aware make easier targets, and they are thus more likely to be engaged in kinetic combat because they are the easier target. The people who make the hard targets, who are trained, who are disciplined, who are alert, who are ready, who are capable both physically and mentally. And I don't just mean that they know how, but I mean that they actually intend to do. Okay, I can train all I want. I can work out and get big and buff. I can fight all I want. But if I don't have the will to act, I'm useless. So people who are disciplined, have the tools, mental and physical, and have the will to act, present a much harder target than those who are much more lackadaisical about it, undisciplined, who don't prep their weapons, don't fire their weapons, don't carry enough ammunition in their weapons, don't maintain their weapons. They present an easier target, and they are more likely to be engaged in kinetic combat operations. And the reality of that isn't that I say kinetic combat operations because I want to be as neutral as possible, but that's not really true. Kinetic combat operations infers the idea that I am planning out something. I am planning an operation to go out there and find some dude and kinetically engage him in violence. That's me being the aggressor, me being the wolf. That's me being disciplined. These people who are not disciplined are more likely to be engaged in that kind of kinetic violence because they're the easier target. They're the people who are more likely to win awards. Need I say anything about Jessica Lynch? Female Army Second Lieutenant in charge of a convoy, 2003-2004, beginning of the war. Convoy's weapons were ineffective. She was kidnapped. No, she wasn't kidnapped. She was taken prisoner of war. Her convoy could not engage the target. Weapons malfunctions. To include Jessica Lynch's weapon. Now, do you really want to come home if you're a politician? Do you really want to come back to America and say, I'm sorry, your baby girl got taken prisoner of war, raped and beaten, and spec ops came in there and saved her ass because she's dumb and undisciplined? No, you want to say, I'm so sorry, you're a victim. You're a hero. You're a tragedy. What happened to you is a tragedy of war. Here's a freaking medal from President Bush. Let's say nothing about the U.S. Special Operations that came in there under dark of night and saved your ass and killed the people who took you. Why? Because they are harder targets. They're bigger, badder wolves. I don't see them standing up there getting a freaking medal by the president. But nonetheless, Jessica Lynch and that convoy was nonetheless engaged in combat. I would submit to you that you can do an entire, if you're a Marine and you're doing 7 months, or if you're an Army and you're doing 14 months, 15 months, so be it. But I can submit to you that you can do your entire deployment in a combat zone outside of the wire. Very important that we mention that, outside of the wire, outside of U.S. protected by force, forward operating bases, regular bases, air bases, and so forth. If you're out there on patrol, in a vehicle or on foot, you can do that entire deployment in combat, under perceived or a real threat, constantly worried about running over or walking over a bomb, constantly looking at every single person like they're trying to kill you. And if they're not going to kill you themselves, they're aiding in somebody who is going to kill you. And you can come home safely and not have once engaged in kinetic combat, not once engaged in a firefight, not once kill somebody, not once try to be killed. The likelihood of that happening is not the greatest. The reason why that would happen is because you're disciplined, you're trained, you're alert, your op tempo is high, you know what the hell you're doing, and you went there to do it. You're scary. Why fight you when they can fight Jessica Lynch? So forth and so forth. Combat is a state of mind. It is not a location. It doesn't matter if it's America. It doesn't matter if it's Pittsburgh. It doesn't matter if it's Iraq. Whatever. in a very real sense, being engaged in kinetic violence to some people might be easier than not being engaged in kinetic violence, due to the fact that when they're engaged in kinetic violence, it is simple. I know who is trying to kill me, and I know that it's happening. And then I have actions to take to defeat them and protect myself. There is a threat. I see the threat. I have engaged the threat, and I can neutralize the threat. Maybe easier for some people to digest than everyone's a threat. I don't know who is a threat, but I know they are a threat. I know they're trying to kill me, but I don't know what to do about it because I can't pinpoint who they are, where they are, what they're doing. That might be more stressful to some people. It is nonetheless combat. Real or perceived lethal danger. Constantly. Constantly. That is the difference between combat and a fight. You are constantly living under this real or perceived threat of mortal, kinetic, violent danger. This is how PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, or readjustment disorder, can kick in for people who have not even seen kinetic violence. Okay, there might be this notion that in order to have PTSD, I had to have been fucking Rambo. Well, I'm not saying that you wouldn't have PTSD if you're Rambo. But not likely. Absolutely not likely. The mindset it takes for you to be on alert all the time, to have a 3-to-1 op tempo, participate in operations that are showing force and deterring enemy presence in operations. 3-to-1 to present that hard target and suspect that every single buddy is either trying to kill you or trying to help somebody to kill you. Put you in a mindset of paranoia, of discipline, of preparation, and of alertness that can very easily put you into that PTSD category when you return home a couple of years later. So this idea about the U.S. Army in 2006 putting a quota on psychiatrists of how much PTSD can be diagnosed, and their generic response when they're kicking back case evals was that this person hasn't seen enough stress to have PTSD is a bureaucratic bucket of shit. More often than not, if you are engaged in real combat, and we are excluding special forces here for a reason, they're special. Generically speaking, if you are engaged in violent kinetic combat, there's a decent chance that it's happening because of your insufficiency. Because somehow, some way, you present an easier target. That's not a global accusation. That's not going to fit everything. But it is a classic example of the Marine Corps versus the Army. Why can so many soldiers be engaged in heavy combat so often? Marines go 7 months and never fire a shot. We might say luck, right? We might say armies are badass, soldiers are badass. And I'm not saying they're not. I don't think being a badass has anything to do with what branch you're in. There are definitely soldiers who are completely competent, viable combatants. So don't get me wrong. But due to the nature of the mission, the nature of the training, the nature of the mindset, they become lax, become dysfunctional, disorganized, let their guard down. Because we have people like Obama for president who don't think we're in a war of terror. We're not on a war with Islam. We're not on a war with Muslims. There's just some people who want to kill us, but we're not on a war with them. You get that kind of an attitude, you get lazy. You sit there on your post with your machine gun with your dick in your hands. Next thing you know, you get your head blown off and you wonder why. And then everyone mourns you, feels sorry for you, thinks you're a victim of the war, uses that as propaganda. I'm not saying there aren't decent, good, viable people who have truly been victims, who have truly been heroes, who have truly lost their life out of all reasonable in honorable circumstances. There's a decent amount of people who lose their life because they're fucking stupid too. But nonetheless, They're fucking stupid in combat. In a situation where they don't have somebody sitting right over them trying to kill them. They think everything's okay. They think they're not in danger. They're just in a combat zone. But hey, no one's out here trying to kill us. I don't see anyone pointing a gun at me. I don't see anyone walking up with a bomb in their chest screaming, Allah Akbar. I think I'm okay. I'm not really in combat. And then they're fucking dead. So I hope that brings to light a point that combat is very much an open idea. It is a sustained exposure to real or perceived danger. It is very important that we understand this. We like to go to movies that show intense, violent, kinetic combat, and we think that that's it. We think that that's what every Marine, that's what every soldier does. We think that's what war is. It's not true. Some do. Let's not disregard that. It's very important. That does happen. And there are people that do that. There are people that are engaged in that. But it is not the norm, it is the exception. Again, I say special operations aside. Why? Because they're special. The very nature of their existence is to do special things. Combat is real. It is a mindset. And due to it being a mindset, not just a physical parameter or a physical manifestation of certain actions or perceived actions, but it being a mindset means it can be carried home too. Hence PTSD. Combat can be carried home. There's a degree here where we have to disconnect and start being analytical about it. I engage in combat when I am in a combat zone. A zone in which combat occurs. For instance, the entire country of Iraq and Afghanistan does not mean that there's kinetic combat going on in every single damn inch of that country, but it is a combat zone. When I leave that zone, a healthy combatant, a healthy soldier, a healthy Marine, a healthy whoever the hell is in combat should be able to, ideally, right, we hope, readjust, to de-escalate, and come back and say, look, I'm on a plane, I'm on a jumbo jet, headed out of Kuwait, headed home, I got some attractive European stewardess here, we're all sitting here smoking and joking on the plane, I'm out of combat. Go home, see your wife, post duty, pay your bills, drive your cool car, you're out of combat. That's what we hope can happen. But that's not always what does happen. Combat is a mindset. And sometimes, with some people, there might be ethnic motivations here, there might be precursors or disabling features about certain minority groups, certain groups of types of people that are more susceptible to this than another group. But nonetheless, the more severe that stress is, the more personally volatile and violating that stress is. For instance, if I really did experience multiple people plotting against me and trying to kill me in a brutal way, I may not ever trust anybody again. So putting me on that plane with those hot stewardesses, heading back to the country, smoking and joking, doesn't mean I'm out of combat. In my head, real or perceived, right? Real or perceived, sustained, kinetic, oftentimes mortal, danger. I would submit to you, that is what combat is.